This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Wednesday and then Thursday, more rain is forecast. So it is one of those situations where you look at the state capital and you see boats that are trying to rescue people, the rescue boats, where you have the familiar guys in vests and women with helmets on trying to go door to door to see if there are any people that they can still rescue. And that's where that 100 people number now came in, because that's as of altogether as of Tuesday morning. Those crews on those boats, the helicopters searching for people as well. There were people that were trapped. They still think there could be more that are trapped, so they're not calling it over yet at this point. People describe seeing waterfalls, mudslides, blocked roads, and washed away bridges. People couldn't leave their homes. They were kind of hemmed in by the water and the damaged roads, because in so many areas, it was about the overflow. There was a woman who said her house sits on a curve on the West River in Londonderry, and said it overflowed its banks. It covered the road out with several feet of water. And she and her husband were totally blocked in. So they rushed to move things to higher shelves. They watched as the river carried away trash cans, propane tanks, anything that wasn't nailed down that was in the yard. And there were other people that just evacuated the best way that they possibly could and tried to get out with the rescue crews. But the fact that you've got now more showers on Thursday in an area that saw the worst flooding and some of the worst flash floods by the late week rain, it can't be ruled out that they're not going to have more problems there. And they still have rising water. That's also part of it, too. So for anybody out there that's been in any kind of flood water, you know exactly what that's like. In Vermont, the storm dumped 6 to 9 inches of rain in some places. That's more than 2 months worth, people. More than 2 months worth. Think about that being dropped on top of you. And seeing the roadways washed with holes in the middle of it, wow. I mean, it was nasty, and it's going to continue to be that way. It's very dangerous in some parts of the capital city. I mean, the crews are in trying to clear what they can and still doing the other side of it, looking for people, but getting tractors out where they can get in. But it still does not look good. That is about extreme heat. Heat waves in Arizona, sweltering other southwest parts of the United States. I am constantly finding myself checking the weather. So that punishing summertime heat is hitting 54 million Americans who are, if they're not seeing it now, they're slated by the end of the week to see triple-digit highs. And some of the most intense heat is predicted in Arizona, especially Phoenix, largest city there, more 110-degree high temperatures on record, expected to be continuing. That makes it really tough on so many people. When the warm air expands and you get that heat dome thing, it causes what they say a vertical bulge in the atmosphere, and it's about the size of a football field, higher in altitude than it normally would be, and that extreme heat causes those air columns to grow. And it has nowhere to, when it has nowhere to go, that's the worst. And in Phoenix, they've already logged 11 consecutive days at or above 110. So these heat warnings are everywhere. Texas, South Plains, you're all getting them there. In Florida, there's a marine heat wave. Water temperatures are off above 95 degrees in some places. So that combines with air temperature in the mid-90s, and that pushes those heat indexes to 100 to 106. Wow, that is the worst. Plus, in Florida, they have the Saharan air layer, that hot, dry slice of air that's several thousand feet above the ground, and it drapes over Southern California, or it has. So then there's been these sunshine sort of downpours, they call them, and they get thunderstorms. There's a lot of thunderstorms and then cooler temperatures in the afternoon. I think a lot of people would like to have the cooler temperatures in the afternoon. Like, fine, give me the dome and then give me the cool temperatures. I can deal if that's what you're going to do with me. That totally works, right? Yes, it absolutely does work for a lot of people. All right, I said Zelensky slammed NATO for omitting a timeline for Ukraine to join. He put out something on Twitter and said how they do things is absurd. It was pretty fiery and expressive, saying that to extend an invitation to Ukraine to join the alliance when allies agree and conditions are met was something that pretty much volleyed around the hallways in this meeting. So what is the language? The language that Russia's gone, that war is over, right? It's done. It's over. And we're ready to lock this down. So there has been a lot of conversation about Ukraine and other things as well. And mostly with Ukraine, it's about support. How much support are you sending? What are you sending to them? And this summit was in Lithuania. So the NATO leaders weren't happy about being blasted in that really point-blank tweet from Zelensky, and I don't think it has an effect on whether or not they get eventually let into NATO, but there are so many things that have to happen in between them. You know, in between the posts, the goalposts, I'll call it. Because you still have the Russian invasion, you're still dealing with that, and I don't think anything happens until that wraps up. Once that wraps up, I think it becomes a whole different conversation. And when I say wraps up, I have no way to know. We know that and neither do you. We know Ukraine is getting some help, but we also know Russia's morale is down, and we know that there's pressure on Russia. But does Putin respond to the pressure? The answer to that is probably not, right? Probably not. All right, one of the most interesting things that I saw on the day, and I want to squeeze it in here at the top, there are things on the sports docket we'll get to when we go to the man cave, but I'm always fascinated by these wrecks and what we can learn from wrecks. And the Navy identified the wreck of a World War II aircraft carrier hit by a kamikaze plane. You know how you see them in the various movies, the kamikaze planes, the Japanese suicide pilots? And this aircraft carrier was found near the Philippines, and it went down in 1945. And the skipper, a guy they called the Big O, Captain Howard Young, had taken extra precautions, posted more outlooks to guard against kamikaze attacks. No one saw the incoming enemy until it was too late. 5 p.m., January 4th, 1945, it sunk. Man Cave next.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney. I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog, yeah, that's Guinness, he is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, or hit me up on Twitter @KateSDelaney. at Kate S. Delaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com.
Andy, and some of the things we'd be talking about is the American pastime, the great game of baseball, Major League Baseball All-Star Game. I covered a bunch of these. I think in my career I covered at least a dozen of them, and it's smart because of the fan interaction, the things that lead up to the game, the home run derby, the skills competition, all that stuff. The National League beat the American League 3-2. It hasn't happened since 2012. How about that? And Elias Diaz's go-ahead homer helped drop the AL. And so it's that epic little rally that made it, I think, much more interesting. He sealed the win with a two-run jack. Let's put it that way. It was interesting, too, because Edgar Martinez and Ken Griffey Jr., this game was held in Seattle, both threw out first pitches because they played for the Mariners, and so they were there. Talk about iconic. And if you look at Ken Griffey Jr., he looks almost like he did when he was playing, almost like. Not 100% like himself, but pretty darn close, let's put it that way. This is a big story. Ukrainian wild card and new mom Elena Spitalina reached the Wimbledon semifinals. A lot of people cheering for her because she's always out there stumping for Ukraine. And this is a huge, 6 months ago she gave birth. And she beat the number one player, Iga Swiatek, in three sets, and it was early in the morning. I walked the dog, and I was going through some prep, and I watched part of that. It was pretty amazing to see. The crowd was just crazy insane for her. They really just love this Ukrainian young woman, 28 years old, because she's used her platform to fundraise and speak out on behalf of her country, and that's probably a big reason that there was lots of support for her, and it's very big for her to get back because she hasn't been in that position in a long time. I mean, she was like a qualifier. Then you had the American hopeful Jessica Pegula, number four in the world. Her family owns the Buffalo Bills. She was upset 6-4, 2-6, 6-4. And in the third set, I think part of what happened is there was this little delay because of some rain and closing the roof. And the longer the delay, sometimes the momentum starts to switch. But the Czech player that she was playing, it's not to take anything away from her because she did really step up. Markita Vondorousa, who, you know, she upset Pegula and the match itself, it was like watching a heavyweight battle. There was just how many miles an hour those forehands were going and what was going on the serve. Here's what was happening on the Hill related to sports. The PGA Tour defended the Saudi deal in the Senate as emails showed plans' initial origins. So they defended their shocking partnership with the Saudi Public Investment Fund during an investigative subcommittee hearing on Tuesday. But even with the hearing, talking about the fragility of the relationship and documents released by the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations showing the parties discussing several dramatic proposals that would significantly alter the pro-golf landscape. And we know what the meltdown has been after that, for sure. And we know what some of the hesitation was as well after that. So there is no merger. There is no deal. That's what tour executives were saying. There's simply an agreement to try to get an agreement and settle lawsuits. Jimmy Dunn is the PGA Tour policy member who helped broker the arrangement. He was there. He said that both parties did a poor job of explaining their deal, calling the initial rollout very misleading and inaccurate. It was confusing. Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut, we have a lot of listeners in Connecticut, hello, hello, chairman of the subcommittee, was the most pointed lawmaker in his questioning of the PGA Tour representatives, urging them to avoid the sellout that the deal appears to be, and warning that accepting Saudi money could have unforeseen consequences. But I don't think any of this is quelling out. It's not, it's going to happen. It's just waiting for it to happen. But it absolutely is going to happen. I can't see how that would be disallowed. Right. Senator Ron Johnson, a Republican from Wisconsin, the subcommittee's ranking Republican, in fact, said the Senate investigation is premature and the side should be allowed to hammer out final details without lawmakers peering over their shoulders. And he said, for the time being, I would recommend we give these guys the space to negotiate something. So, look, Blumenthal had a 10-page summary document plus an additional 265 pages of supplementary emails, messages, other communications submitted to the subcommittee by the PGA Tour and LIV Golf in advance of the hearing. So what else is going on in the world of sports? There was the break, because you had all the baseball players that were chosen anyway that were playing in the All-Star game. And for the others, it was a couple of nights off in a very long season. The NBA wants to be heard from. Everything else is being talked about. Approved a rule changing on some rule changes on coaches' challenges and flopping. So these two rule changes go into effect next season. A second coach's challenge, if the first one is successful, and an in-game flopping penalty at its annual meeting. That was so, so huge. They were both unanimously, yes, 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 yes. And coaches having access to a second challenge is something that teams and coaches in particular have been pushing for a long time. So now if a team gets a challenge correct earlier in the game, it will have a chance for a second one later in the meeting, which doesn't get better than that. But teams will still have to retain the first timeout they have to use to call for the initial challenge. They won't get their timeout back for their second challenge, even if it is successful. So there's this new rule also trying to curb instances of flopping. So when a referee calls a flop, there's going to be a non-unsportsmanlike technical foul called on the offending player's team, and the opposing team will get a free throw. Wow. Referees also won't have to stop play to call a flop. They can wait until the next stop in live action, if needed, to make the call. Boy, isn't that interesting. Has there been more of that? Well, it depends on the makeup of the team, right? And the flopping rule change is going to be utilized for a one-year trial basis. That's it. So it's not like this is the deal, take it or leave it, and this is where we're at. It's not that scenario that's playing out there at all. I told you about the women at Wimbledon. But Novak Djokovic tied Roger Federer, making his 46th slam to the semifinals. Wow. He did it. He hung in and played some incredible tennis against Andrei Rublev, 4-6, 6-1, 6-4, 6-3. So the 36-year-old from Serbia is pursuing a fourth career major. He already set the men's mark in that category by collecting number 23 at the French Open last month, pulling ahead of Rafa Nadal. Federer is next on the list with 20. The way he was playing, he was on fire in the match. I mean, absolutely on fire. And I wondered if at any point in looking at the Joker, if he felt that, ooh, this is not where I want to be. This is not what I want to happen. But it all worked out. It all worked out in the end. Now we have some big matches that are coming up on Wednesday, including the American Chris Eubanks, who was on this show when we went to Miami. He was ranked over 100 in the world. Now he's all the way down to 31. So Eubanks takes on Daniil Medvedev. And Madison Keys takes on Sabalenka. There's a lot of conversation about that meeting. And then you've got Onis Jabeur, and Elena Rybakina. That will happen in quarters for the women, too. So there's some interesting matches still left. A little bit of rain helped kind of shake up London and led to more matches being squeezed in, where normally it would be not plenty of matches, but not as many all at one time, trying to figure out the arrangements for who's going where and all the things in between that you have to deal with when you're dealing with rain. It's pretty impressive how they pull out the, how they pull out the roof and just immediately, boom, before you know it, it's up. And it might not feel that way to the players, but it looks that way. And it gives them a little bit of time, let's put it that way, right? So what happens in these upcoming matches couldn't be, I mean, just could not be better. When you think of looking at somebody who's struggled to get there, and that's Chris Eubanks, but what a turnaround he's had this whole season, defeating Stefanos Tsitsipas. And what is his rank? His rank right now, 100 in the beginning of the year, now it is 43. My gosh, he's so tall, too. 6'7". Woo! Coming up, Kelly Popwell with a thriller you don't want to miss. Howard Michael Gould with a book of his own, detective thriller in another sense, and is actually a movie that's out there in the world now. Stay with us.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
USA News Update. Extreme heat is impacting more than 42 million Americans this week. High temperatures are already hitting the Southwest in states including California and Arizona, and the dangerous conditions are only expected to get worse. President Biden is expressing gratitude to the Turkish president for enabling Sweden's NATO accession during their bilateral meeting at the two-day NATO summit in Lithuania.
Thank you for your diplomacy and your courage to take that on.
Turkey recently lifted its block on Sweden's entry into the military alliance just before the start of the summit, bolstering NATO amidst Russia's ongoing conflict with Ukraine. The Secret Service will brief the House Oversight Committee on their investigation into the cocaine found inside the White House. Committee Chair Republican James Comer had been requesting the briefing for days. MSNBC is reporting it will happen Thursday morning. John Schaefer, USA News.
time around on Author's Corner here on America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. We are so excited to have a conversation with Kelly Popwell. Her book is called Heart Race, and it is exactly the kind of genre that I absolutely love. This is a story that will pull you in and will take you all the way through. I think it's going to be very hard to put down. So again, let's talk about the book. Let's talk with Kelly about how she came up with this story. Kelly, thanks for popping on.
Hey, Kate, how are you?
I'm good. So what was it that drove you, first of all, to write this novel?
My husband, well, my boyfriend at the time, we started writing little stories to one another, and he just liked my writing style, and he said, I really think that you should write a book. And I had never thought about it before, and I thought, you know what? It'd be great for a fiction because you can make up your story, you can make up your characters, and you can just, you know, go with what you want. I mean, and everybody likes to be in a fantasy world, so, you know, it's fiction. But then also, you know, it could be like somebody's story, but they're living every day.
Let's talk about the story. Somebody comes up to you and they say, Kelly, what's the book about? I love the cover. What's the story about?
I like to call this genre, I basically call it a political romance thriller because it's got all these different components. It's got the romance. And it's got the thriller because this, the political person that she is running against is very, has a lot of scandal and very scrupulous, and he just has a lot of demons in his closet. And she's this wholesome, honest attorney, and she just can't understand that these people could be this scrupulous when they get into office. And she just has to overcome all these issues with her opponent. So, yeah.
Ooh. And we're going to give away all the stories.
Right.
Tell us about developing her. Tell us about personality, all of that.
Okay. Well, the main character in this story, she's an attorney from New Hampshire, and her name is Casey Butler. And the way I came up with her name was because my name at the time was Kelly Blumenthal. So I wanted to use my initials, so I came up with Casey Butler. So it would be, you know, kind of a play on me. And Casey is an attorney, and she came from an honest family, and she went to law school, got her degree, and then somebody had asked her about running for either a House seat or a Senate seat, and she just didn't think it was right at the time. And then, you know, when she saw, like, you know, an African-American become a president, she saw all these, you know, Secretary of State became women and an open gay cabinet member. She's like, now might be a good time for me to run. And what she has to do is she has to look for a campaign manager and get all these different affairs in order to make her run for Senate. And she puts the word out, and she's looking at all these different candidates, and she finds a guy from South Carolina. And he comes up, and they had a good rapport, so he became her campaign manager, and unbeknownst to them, they had some chemistry, and they started to fall in love, but she knew it wasn't right, he knew it wasn't right, but you know how it is when two people get together that fall in love.
How fun. So then again, it's like you said, it's political romance thriller. I like the way that you build that, because that's exactly what you've got here in your work, which, by the way, you can get on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever great books are sold. And, you know, so you have Casey Butler and obviously a female and female in the political works and what that's like. Was it fun for you to write this?
Oh, absolutely. The nice part about it, especially being fiction, you can start to type, and then all of a sudden an idea will pop in your mind, whether it's a new character you want to develop, and you have to name that character, you have to get a background on that character, and you kind of like, you can make it up as you go, and it's like, I'm just typing along, and it's like, oh, I could use this person's name, or I could make this character, and you just, it was just so easy flowing that it just developed as it went on. It was like, and it goes in a different way than what you first expected. When you go into it, you think this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end. And as you're going, different things just started to develop. It's like, oh, you know, I can pull this in now. And a lot of it goes from, you know, your own life story or what you see on the news. And it's just really a good development as I progressed into it.
Yeah, you know, they say a sign of a good book is when the character lives with you, and I can tell she definitely lived with you. Where that's why you said, you know, you have this idea, someone saw that ability in you to tell a good story, and then she and the story actually takes you in different directions. How fun is that? Was this just a gas for you to write this book?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it was, I had so much fun writing it and developing things. And in the book, there's a dog, Casey. She doesn't have any children. She's not married, but she has a dog, and this dog is her life. And she just, you know, and I know a lot of people out there, just their dogs are like their world. You see them walking around in strollers and stuff with their dogs and buy them all these things. So she has a good background, and she's just a wholesome person. And like I said, her dog means a lot to her. Her dog in the story is named Bella. It's a black lab. And there's a lot of funny things that happen with the dog in the story as well.
Oh, I love that. And we have such a dog-centric population. Trust me, there, and you know this, there are so many people that absolutely love dogs. And, you know, you see how politics are. What comes out of what you talk about in your book is, gosh, how hard it is, you know, campaign manager, how hard it is to really run.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've worked with a state senator at one point on her campaign many years ago, and just the amount of decisions that have to go into something. You have to have a campaign slogan. You have to have the color scheme that you want. You have to make your posters that you're putting up. You want to do your T-shirts. And everything has to focus around one point. And like in Casey's point, she loves the color purple. So purple was in her color scheme. It's like, you'll see that when she does her one big campaign, fundraiser, she has the purple flowers, and, she develops around that. And then her campaign slogan is, we've got to do it right this time for Washington. And everything develops from that. And it just seemed to flow when I was doing it.
Yeah. And you can tell that, absolutely. So what do you hope when people pick up your book, what do you hope they take away from reading Heart Race, your novel?
I want them to take away the fact that when you fall in love, it's not just you, it's another person. And the fact that sometimes you can't control your feelings. When you meet somebody, and it just sometimes happens, and you don't want it to happen, but sometimes the chemistry is just too much. And then the whole fact that she is an honest and wholesome person, she doesn't want to fall out of being that person as well. And she just has an aura around her that she can draw people in, and then these people, like other characters that came into the story, it's like she has a sense of, she likes to help people. And the people who she's helping, it was like, why are you helping me? And she just has a rapport with these people, and she just draws them in. And the other characters in the story as well, some other ones fall in love because they interacted with her.
Ooh, does this make you want to write more books? Because we want to read more of your books.
Oh, absolutely. If I had more time, I would just, if I could be dropped on a deserted island with just a pen and paper for a month, I would love it. I just, right now, it's so hard to find the time because of working and everything that I can actually sit down and write. But the stories are in my head. I just have to get them onto paper. But there's times it's like, when I was writing this book, there was times I'd wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, my character could do that. So I would have a pen and paper beside my bed. But I didn't want to turn on the light to you know, interrupt my husband. So I would, like, try to write in the dark. Then I'd get up the next morning and go, okay, try to decipher this. And then I remembered what I was writing.
Oh, how funny. So you have, I mean, so it's funny because Casey is definitely still with you. And
yeah,
Sometimes they're in your thoughts and giving you ideas about, hey, don't put me away yet.
Right. And there's some people that have read the book that have, they would call me and go, when's the sequel coming out? I need to know what happens when she goes to D.C.
Right, because what's the other side of that? Yeah.
Yeah, so there's times it's like, should I do a sequel to this, or should I just do a whole new different cast of characters or something? So, but it definitely could have a sequel to it, the way it ended.
It could, and we're not going to tell anyone about the ending. You have to get this book. It will pull you in. It's so easy to pick up. Like I said before, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Kelly Popwell, terrific catching up with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And the best part about this book is Keith Urban makes an appearance several times because she's a fan of his. So Keith Urban does make an appearance with his wife, Nicole, for a fundraiser. And like I said, my ultimate goal in life would be to write the Keith Urban biography for him. But whenever it comes to that, maybe someday. But, you know, it's just the book is so well taken by so many people so far.
Yep, I love it. And I love that you put in the Keith Urban, the nod to Keith Urban, because how much you enjoy him and enjoy his music and have met him, etc. So that we're not going to give everything away, but it's really, again, a great book to read. Kelly, thanks.
Thank you so much, Kate. It was great talking with you.
You too.
Delaney, I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog, yeah, that's Dennis. He is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook. Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook. Or hit me up on Twitter at Kate S. Delaney. At Kate S. Delaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com. Welcome to the show, Howard Michael Gould. Boy, he has these three novels. So you've got Below the Line, a Charlie Waldo novel. You have Last Looks, a novel, a Charlie Waldo novel, book one. You have Pay or Play, a Charlie Waldo novel, book three. So obviously.
Hey guys, why settle for poor quality Powdiarco that's sold by stores and online resellers when you can get Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdiarco Super Tea at drinksupertea.com or 818-965-9113. The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdiarco Super Tea is only available at drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today. Welcome to the show, Howard Michael Gould. Boy, he has these three novels. So you've got Below the Line, a Charlie Waldo novel. You have Last Looks, a novel, a Charlie Waldo novel, book one. You have Pay or Play, a Charlie Waldo novel, book three. So obviously, and it's the trifecta. I love that because you really get invested in a character. But Howard knows how to do this. He's been in the business. He's been a TV screenwriter, producer, etc. Been involved with some really big names in Hollywood and some great productions. And so it's no surprise that this is a book, these three books that and character that you get involved in. Howard, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this. This is your baby. Tell me about Charlie Waldo and how this came about.
Well, it actually came about 10 years ago, started writing the books. I had thought of him as a character for a TV series. I had been mostly a comedy writer before that, but I got hired to write a couple of detective things, and I liked him a lot. And I just was sort of casting about looking for a real high-concept hook for a character. And I started to see some things about people who had sort of divested themselves of their things for various reasons and living as minimalists. And the extreme version of that, and this is real, people who cut down to 100 things that they own. Your bowl is a thing, your spoon is a thing, your shirt is a thing, and you've got 97 left. And I started to think about what in a detective's past might put him in a place where, out of a sort of penance and a goal of not doing any more harm to the earth, he would live such a hyper-environmentalist, minimalist life, and came up with Charlie Waldo. And I actually went out and pitched it as a TV series to a network where they applauded at the end of the pitch, which was the first time I'd ever had that happen in my career. And then 3 days later, they passed because they said, here, we do cops, not private eyes. And I thought, I don't know what to do with this anymore. And I put it away for a while. And then I wrote it as a screenplay. And then it was sort of on track to get made a couple of times and kept falling through. But I loved this one so much, I didn't want to let it go. And I tried writing a novel, which I'd never done before, and it sold right away. And now we have three of them and the movie coming out in February. The
wow.
Movie, the first one, which was Last Looks. Yeah.
Wow. So tell us that process. What was it like that you said you had never done a novel? Here you are a skilled screenwriter. So now you have to adapt to that format. Was it easy to adapt?
You know, at first I sort of treated it like I would an overstuffed movie. I had done so many drafts of it. I thought, well, boy, I can use every scene that I like that I had to keep cutting out for time. And I went back and reread some of my favorite detective novels and read a handful more that I had heard about that were really good. And I came up with sort of, what now seem kind of simplistic guidelines. You know, I said, I like when they're about 30 chapters. I like when the chapters are about yay long. So this is great to read before I go to sleep or something. And then just sort of broke my overstuffed movie outline into 30 pieces, and then just tried writing one to see what it would be like. And I showed it to my wife, and she really liked it. And then I wrote six more, and when I had seven, I went to two friends who had written novels, and I said, should I keep doing this? And if either of them had said, no, stop, I probably would have. But I got a lot of encouragement, and when I finished, I got an agent right away, and he said, we're going to sell this right away, and he did.
Wow. So you talk about the movie coming out in February and Last Looks, Charlie Waldo novel, book one. Tell us about that book. Tell us about a little bit about what happens to Charlie Waldo.
Well, when we meet him, he has been living in seclusion for 3 years in Idlewild, which is a town way up a mountain outside of L.A., and he's lived actually as a hermit out of punishment, self-punishment, for a case that went terribly wrong that resulted in somebody inadvertently losing his life, an innocent person who Charlie Waldo thought he had figured out had committed a murder. He had gotten a false tip, and he accepted the false tip and got the guy put away, and the guy got killed in prison before Waldo could get him out. And so he goes up, and he's living like that, and his ex-girlfriend, who is a private eye, comes to try to talk him into working a case with her. And it's a sensational Hollywood murder case. It's a big star who's also a belligerent alcoholic who, in a blackout drunk, may or may not have killed his wife. Everybody thinks he did, but a fancy Hollywood lawyer wants a private eye's help in trying to figure out if maybe he didn't. And Waldo first says no, but then a couple of things happen that kind of force him off the mountain and into the case. And in the movie, they're both great. Charlie Hunnam plays Waldo, Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy in a bunch of movies you'd know. And Mel Gibson plays the blackout drunk actor, big star, and they're both fabulous in it.
Wow. How interesting. It had to be interesting with the casting. Did you just know? I mean, Charlie especially, he seems perfect for that role.
You know, he's great for it. There's a whole long matching process, you know. You know, some agent reads it and says, oh, this big star will want to do it, and then they don't. And then another star is in it, and you do some rewrites to try and make it fit that person, and then for one reason or another, the timing isn't right, and they fall out. When Charlie Hunnam came along, it was just a perfect marriage, and especially when he read the book and was able to get deeper into understanding the character, he just totally embraced it. And there are a lot of similarities. I mean, Charlie Hunnam went so far as to go live alone in the woods for 2 weeks before we started shooting, right before we started.
Wow.
And we shot on location. We were shooting Atlanta for L.A. We shot, about a week's worth of exteriors out here in L.A., but a lot in Atlanta. And Charlie went out there with 100 things and kept himself Spartan in the same way that the character Waldo does. So he really connected with him.
What do you hope people take away from reading your novels?
Well, I think this is what happens with the people who like them. First, I hope that they're going to be very entertained. They're complexly plotted, but they're also very funny. I mean, that's the thing we sort of haven't touched in this, is that sentence by sentence, page by page, there's a lot of humor to them. And they're sort of unusual within the category in both trying to be sort of, a full-on legitimate dark detective story and also funny along the way. But what people often say to me is that after they've read one or all three of these, they find themselves thinking like Waldo a little bit all day as they buy something else that's wrapped in plastic, you know, or look at buying something disposable that they don't need or that'll mean throwing away something else that they already have, which is great.
Yeah, exactly. It gets you thinking. That there's no question about that. And you got a fourth book coming along, right?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through the process of writing a fourth Waldo. Takes me about a year to write one of these. I think that's longer than most people in the mystery category. And I don't know if that's just because I didn't come up writing those or what. But, yeah, it takes a while.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so these books, Last Looks, a novel, Charlie Waldo novel, book one, Below the Line, a Charlie Waldo novel, Pay or Play, a Charlie Waldo novel, book three. I love
it.
Yeah,
you know, I think he's making a Charlie Waldo novel, but those are the three, right? Last Looks, Below the Line, and Pay or Play.
Yeah, and I think it's good because when you look it up, it's easy. They'll all come up. It's easy to find them on Amazon or Barnes and Noble, that's for sure. So
good. For
you, it's just a waiting process now for February and the movie because who knows what happens, all the specifics of that kind of just fall into place.
I don't feel like I'm waiting. I mean, we were waiting for a long time because we shot this in 2019. We shot it before the pandemic. And then the whole figuring out how to release it, figuring out whether to take it to a festival. I mean, they planned to take it to a festival, and then that festival got canceled. So we've all been waiting 2.5 years by the time it comes out.
Yeah,
but
wow.
I just get up and work every day. I've got a couple of TV projects that I'm dabbling with that may turn into something, and definitely a fourth book in the works. And when the movie gets closer, we'll have that to celebrate.
There you go.
People will like it. It's good.
Yeah, perfect place to end this. Howard Michael Gould, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Looking back, pre-keeping track.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You too can order or get info about the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original pure Pau D'Arco and drink super tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113.
Completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. Drinksupertea.com.